From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
The NBA has become the first major league sports league to change its rules in the middle of a championship. You're listening to the Open Mic podcast from the Opubco studios. I'm sports editor Mike Sherman. I'm here with Darnell Mayberry, our Thunder beat writer. And Darnell, the NBA changed the rules.
How so?
Did you notice they changed the rules? It's now legal to punch a guy in the stomach when you're guarding him. Have you been watching the NBA Finals?
All right, I was talking to a coworker, and I'm assuming you talked to the same guy, and you're talking about Trevor Ariza.
Trevor Ariza, the Los Angeles Lakers, is capitalizing on this rule change, announced only to him, Phil Jackson, and his Laker teammates, that it's okay to punch the guy you're guarding in the stomach while you're guarding him. And it's working splendidly for him and his defense of Hedo Turkoglu, who's obviously a better player, hence the body blows.
I wanna let our loyal listeners know that the coworker from which this comment originated is a Laker hater. Okay, Orlando won the game. Can we start off talking about how Orlando won the game and not hatred for the Lakers? I don't understand it.
Let me ask you this. Is he punching him in the stomach?
No, he's not punching him in the stomach. It's called a forearm to the midsection. Yeah. In the post, it's legal. On the wing, it's not, number one. Number two, it's called getting in your chest defensively. They teach it. You body up. When Courtney Lee does it to Kobe Bryant, it's no big deal. But when someone from the Lakers, who everybody either loves or hates, does it to the beloved Orlando Magic, it's suddenly a problem.
What I'm saying is this. While we're in the midst of celebrating Trevor Ariza and his coming out party as a Michael Cooper-style defender, let's review his tactics, which basically involve hip checks, punches to the gut.
So you're saying he's a dirty player?
I'm saying I think the NBA changed the rules. Really. I'm not saying he's doing it. I don't think he's dirty. I'm not saying he's become a Detroit Piston overnight. I'm not saying any of that.
What I'm saying is
they've changed the rules because this is allowed. I've seen Turkoglu try to make the corner on a pick and roll, and I've seen him fight over screens, and so the way he's fighting over screens is interesting in its own way. But you know what? That happens in the NBA. But when he catches up, the forearm shiver, the punch in the gut, that's a great tactic.
You know,
it's working, too.
I'll be honest with you. I haven't even noticed it. Of all the things that I've noticed in Game 3, Trevor Ariza putting a forearm to Turkoglu's gut was not one of them. It just wasn't. I mean, I don't understand how that becomes a storyline. And what was a fantastic Game 3.
Well, it was a fantastic Game 3. The Magic's up 2-1. If they didn't allow punches to the midsection.
It's not like it cost Orlando the game.
So the Lakers are up 2-1. And this is actually what I'm talking about is a trend that's going on. And it's interesting that the Lakers are employing it. Because the Lakers, if you look at them, are the NBA's sleek franchise. They're the most talented franchise. Most years, when they come in the finals, it's very rare where they have to try to get you in a mosh pit. But that's the way the Lakers are winning, frankly. That's why they're up in the series 2-1, and Ariza's doing well. What I'm saying to you, Darnell, is this. How can the league allow Trevor Ariza to play like that? And the other thing about this is a league, remember, let's go back to the Dwayne Wade finals. 3 years ago, Dwayne Wade touched Dwayne Wade, and it's a foul.
Yep.
Any hand checking on the perimeter, and it's a foul. This was a league that tried to speed up the game, open up the game, and what's happening now is maybe it's a big against a little.
Trevor Ariza is a big 6'7", 6'8" guy.
But he's not 6'10", but Turkoglu is 6'10".
Yeah.
So what I see in this matchup is here's a smaller guy trying to guard a bigger guy. They're not in the post when this is happening.
Which is your only argument, I would say. I mean, as long as they're not in the post, I think you have a valid argument. When you're in the post, it's good defense. I think it's good defense. I mean, we're in the NBA Finals. This isn't, you know, game 41 of 82. This is the NBA Finals. You got to let guys get physical. To me, I like that the Lakers are turning into a mosh pit, as you say. What was the biggest knock on them last season? That they were soft.
Right.
Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom. These guys didn't have any toughness. Trevor Ariza is playing with intensity, effort, and energy, and now we're knocking him for it. I first of all, again, I haven't seen it. I haven't noticed.
If you've seen it, then how can you
tell? I don't think it's been that big of a glaring, noticeable defensive sort of illegal defense or fouls, dirty defense, shove forearm shivers, forearms to the gut. I don't think it's been that big of a problem to where it's an issue.
Do you remember when Ronnie Nunn came here to Oklahoma City before the very first game, very first NBA game in Oklahoma City that the Hornets played? It was a preseason game against the Denver Nuggets, and for all of us neophytes in covering the NBA game, the NBA sends in an official, a former official, the league supervisor of officials, I think, trains officials to show us what you can and can't do. And remember when he showed us what post-defense strategies? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What he said was, it's called it the arm bar. It's interesting. They didn't call it the forearm. They called it arm bar. I love euphemisms.
Yeah.
But anyway, a forearm in the back is legal. In the post.
Yeah, in the post.
I'm not talking about the post, and I'm not talking about the back. I'm talking about shots to the midsection.
Yeah.
And what's happening right now, that's the Orlando Magic's main advantage. That pick and roll play with Turkoglu and Dwight Howard. And what he's doing is blowing it up.
Good for him.
He's blowing it up.
Good for him. You know, speaking of blowing, let me tell you something. Joey Crawford blew more calls last night in Game 3 than I've seen a ref blow in one game ever. I mean, if you want to talk about...
You mean the ones he missed?
If you want to talk about no calls and bad calls, start with Joey Crawford. There's a lot of calls that went against the Lakers that Joey Crawford just missed. Michael Petras fouled Kobe Bryant on the last jump shot in the first quarter. I mean, he just grabbed his arm and fouled him. Kobe put a move on him, shook Petras back. Petras tried to put his arm out, and he hit his elbow on Kobe Kobe's way up. And then Petras fouled Gasol on another possession on one end, double dribbled on it, going in for a layup on the other one. I mean, Joey Crawford, and then Dwight Howard. This was actually a bad call for Orlando. Joey Crawford made. They called a foul on Howard. Should have been a jump ball. When Kobe drove to the basket, they called a foul on Howard, and it should have been a jump ball. Joey Crawford had a terrible series. It's one of the things I noticed most in the playoffs, way more than Trevor Ariza in that Game 3. Go to my blog, newsok.com, Thunder Rumblings blog. You can read more about it.
I usually take up for Joey Crawford.
I like him.
I like his.
He's getting bad. Duncan situation, now this. I forget there was someone else in the playoffs. It was another
Dwight
series
Howard.
He did. It was Dwight Howard. It was the Tito on Dwight Howard. Joey Crawford is coming into question. I'm just telling you.
Well, here's the thing about Joey. I like him still, but I'm saying he's more shtick right now than the other stuff. Which I always liked the guy who took control. I always liked the guy who explained the calls. It's okay. He does that. But I'll be with you. But now one thing I want to say is, tell me this. Was Kobe being fouled at the free throw line when he was missing those five free throws? I didn't see any contact there. What I saw was the closer. The closer missed five free throws last night. Five. Here's the other thing is, this closer thing. Mm-hmm. Can I talk about that for a second?
Be careful what you say.
I'm going to say something.
He's got history on his side.
Here's what I'm going to say is, the closer, that is not a basketball term. It's ridiculous. The closer. Who decided that was going to be a basketball term?
Kobe Bryant, when he closed out several games.
Close.
Regular season and playoffs.
Closer. Listen, here's why they used closer. You know why? Because Mr. Clutch was taken. Clutch is the word in basketball. Clutch has always been the word in basketball.
Let me tell you something.
All of a sudden, we're going to call it the closer.
Here's why. Clutch is a guy like Robert Horry who hits one shot in 48 minutes. He used to hit more than one shot, but he'll hit one big shot. That's clutch. A closer is a guy who takes over from 6 minutes remaining in the fourth until the end of the game and carries you to victory. That's Kobe Bryant.
You know, I watched the game last night, and that's not what I saw at all.
Can't win them all.
That's not what I saw. What I saw was a tired Kobe Bryant.
You hear what he said in his post game?
He's not tired.
Well, he said that, but of course he's going to say that. They're throwing four guys at him. when you're throwing four, when you have everybody on the court looking at you, I mean, of course you're going to get tired.
I don't look. Here's the deal.
Did you see the first quarter?
Yeah.
Did you see how many shots he took? Did you see how he carried his team to that 4-point lead?
What I'm saying right now is, Kobe is schizophrenic. He's schizophrenic, and it's the get everybody involved, Kobe, or the I'm going to score all the points, Kobe. And here's what I think could end up costing the Lakers: is the I'm going to get in everybody involved, Kobe, disappears. And the I'm going to score all the points, Kobe. I'm going to scream at my teammates, Kobe. We've seen that guy, haven't we? He's been out there.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Hey, I'm going to scream at my teammates.
There's nothing wrong with that.
All right, but all I'm saying is that's who it was. I don't see that as being – that's not a successful, time-honored strategy for the Lakers. I don't see it. The whatever happened to the this is a different Kobe. This is a get everybody involved. This is a trust your teammates, Kobe. That's not what I'm seeing.
I'm sorry, I think he had 4 assists in the first quarter before he scored 17 of the final 19.
What I think is going to happen is this. He had a rough game, rough end game last night. Rough second half, rough fourth quarter. And I think we're going to see the I'm not sharing, I got it, Kobe.
I don't think so.
Is that the Laker Kobe that can win?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, I think you're good. I think you're good with both of them. But the thing that I thought was most impressive about Kobe Bryant is that through the adversity, through the fatigue, in the fourth quarter when Orlando made its push in the fourth quarter, Kobe was on the bench, and he came back. Phil left him on the bench until about the 7-minute mark in the fourth quarter. When he came back, you didn't see that, as I like to call it, the number 8, you know, Kobe Bryant. You still saw the number 24, Kobe Bryant, who came in. He passed the ball to Trevor Ariza. He passed the ball to Pau Gasol, ran the pick and roll with Gasol, tried to get his teammates involved. You didn't see him revert to the number 8 of old.
You're right. But what
until
I'm saying,
later on, and he just couldn't deliver. He couldn't bring it home. And I can't fault him for that. He still had faith in his teammates. And for the longest, people knocked Kobe Bryant for not having faith in his teammates. And now when he does it, you're calling him schizophrenic. I don't understand.
He is schizophrenic. But what I want to say is this. Which of those two guys do the Lakers most need to win this championship?
Well, I think he needs to do exactly what he did in Game 3. I think he put a little bit too much pressure on himself with the first half, with how much energy he exerted in the first half. I think as long as he gets his teammates involved first, defers a little bit, and then takes over the game down the stretch, I think that's the guy who's going to win the Lakers this series.
Has the Magic found a solution to guarding Kobe Bryant? Have they found an answer in Courtney Lee?
No. No. Every time, you know, Courtney Lee seems to – or every time Kobe Bryant – every time there's a defender who seems to think they figured out Kobe Bryant, Kobe embarrasses him. You go back to Reuben Patterson, Rajah Bell. The list goes on. I mean, Kobe –
figured out Kobe Bryant one time?
One time he did, and he declared himself the Kobe stopper.
That's right, when he was playing in Portland.
Exactly. So I don't think so. I think Courtney Lee, you have to give him credit. A rookie came in. He bounced back from missing that shot. The layup that could have won him the game in L.A. in Game 2. And he defended Kobe well. But I still don't think they have an answer for him. And that's a problem.
Okay. Let's shift gears, and we're talking about answers. And you're listening to the Open Mic Podcast. I'm Mike Sherman here with Darnell Mayberry, our Thunder beat writer. And everybody was looking for answers on what the Oklahoma City Thunder is going to do at the third pick. Darnell, this seems like, you know, the possibilities are endless. I can't ever remember sitting here looking at a team in a slot and thinking about them having more possibilities, more scenarios than the Thunder does right now. Is that the way you see it?
I do, and I wrote about it in this past Monday's main event. I think there are as many as 8 guys who the Thunder could realistically come away with depending on what they do with the third pick, whether they just select a guy outright or draft or trade back or even trade up. You know, I mentioned names like Blake Griffin, Ricky Rubio, Hasheem Thabeet, James Harden, Jordan Hill, Tyreke Evans. Who am I missing? Stephen Curry. There's a lot of guys that the Thunder needs from this draft. I mean, I don't think all of these guys warrant the third overall selection, but I think they could go a lot of different ways.
Okay. the factors that create all these possibilities. I want you to go through them, and I want to ask you, which do you think is the biggest of the three? One is need. Okay, here's a young team with a need for interior defense, need for toughness, a need for some more depth. So need. Number two is the market. The market seems to be variable. I mean, it seems like there's what we're seeing is some bubbling up of talent now. It used to, a couple months ago, we said this is a two-player draft. And now, I don't know. It seems like
there's more talent than we
thought.
And
it also seems like the top 10 is sort of emerging. There's a top 10 emerging that's solid and includes some players that, you know, you're reading people say this guy's going to be an all-star in the top 10. All right. Number three is the Thunder's own moves. What I think they've done is they've given themselves maximum flexibility. So you got, what's a bigger factor in that leads us to look at all these possibilities? One, is it the market of players? Two, is it the need of the Thunder? Or three, is it the flexibility that the Thunder has created for itself?
And you're asking the biggest.
What's the biggest one?
I think it's the flexibility. I mean, you know, I don't think, clearly the Thunder's biggest need is interior defense. Anyone who watched one Thunder game knows that. I mean, Hashim Thabeet is the guy who best fits that category. I don't see Sam Presti taking him. I just don't see them using a number three pick on Hashim Thabeet, a guy who's basically a specialist and a shot blocker. I just don't think you draft a guy third overall that high to come in and be a specialist.
Are you saying that because you think the Thunder needs interior defense, but not that badly to the extent that they would basically cancel any other need?
Well, that and also I don't think that, you know, when you're 23 win team, you can't make decisions based on need. I don't think. I think you have to take the best player available. I think the Thunder has
many needs.
The Thunder has exactly. They have a lot of different needs, and I think they have to take the best player available. And if that's Ricky Rubio, the point guard, you have to sort of take him if you think he's the best player available, even though you have Russell Westbrook, and sort of put the pieces together later. I think you just have to acquire talent at this point.
Okay, let's talk about Rubio, who in many regards is sort of the player this draft is turning on. I mean, you have people who want to who talk about trading up to get him, people like the Knicks, people maybe like the Wizards. You have the Thunder sort of in this position, and the Memphis Grizzlies, probably there's a part of Memphis that would like to take him. You hear the talk about some divisions in the front office. The owner wants the beat. The GM wants Rubio or might want Rubio. You got Rubio saying, I'm not really that interested in Memphis. And it's that whole cat and mouse game's going through. Let's say that goes through. Let's say that Memphis doesn't know and they can't execute a trade. And there they are and they take the beat. Thunder's on the clock. If they take Rubio, is it possible that this is a, you know, Sam Presti's got his plan for this franchise of what he wants it to be. Does the plan change at all with the selection of Rubio?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. It depends on what they can get for Rubio. I think definitely Sam Presti will look to trade Ricky Rubio if he got him. You know, I think he'd go to the Clippers and say, hey, you know, we got this point guard. You might, you know, we hear you're trying to get rid of a point guard that's currently on your roster. You got a guy we like by the name of Blake Griffin. Let's make a deal. You know, I think there are going to be some negotiations if they come with if they come away with Rubio. I do think that Sam Presti likes him enough, and not just Presti, but the entire organization likes him enough where they'll be comfortable keeping him if they had to. You know, not like it's sort of a dreadful decision that they'd have to make. I think they like him enough that where they wouldn't mind him being on this roster. So I think it definitely presents the Thunder with options. I don't think it'll change their plan drastically. I just think they'll have to look at all their options. It'll give them more options, and I think that's a good thing.
Okay, let me go through some options for you. Here's one. Instead of building the next San Antonio Spurs, you're building the Phoenix Suns. Here's what I mean by that. If you take Rubio and keep him, guess what you've done? You've strengthened a perceived strength. You have a wide. You have guys who have great open court skills. Jeff Green, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. You've added another one, another piece, another freewheeling open court player. You know what else you've done? You've added a guy who you have. You got another point guard, but you don't have to play him right away. Yeah. He's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. There's no need to run him out there for 36 minutes a game. You might going to the playoffs next year might. Yeah, be
take a hit.
Takes a hit, but I mean it's probably unlikely anyway. But anyway, you're driving down, you've taken a turn on the Phoenix Sun Boulevard. Do you agree with that?
Well, your point guards will have to learn how to shoot, first of all. Russell Westbrook and Ricky Rubio aren't the biggest sharpshooters. You need more shooters. But I hope, I mean, I know you love the Phoenix Suns.
I love them.
How far have they gone? That's my thing. They're exciting. They play a fun brand of ball, but they never went to the finals. I mean, give me a team that's going to be built to compete for championships, and I think that's what Presti's doing, and he's doing it through defense, not through offense and running.
True, but he's also in this draft having to respond to what the market has. So, yes, he could trade. Yeah, you take Rubio, and if the right opportunity presents itself to trade down – or trade up and package some things with Rubio, trade down and get some things for Rubio in addition to a pick. Absolutely. That allows you to keep going the current path. You've got your offensive skill players. You really need to add some defensive toughness. That's the flexibility that comes in. What I'm saying is if you keep Rubio, I think you got to look at your plan. I think you got to look and say, okay, more entertaining. Maybe less tough.
Well, here's what we know about Sam Presti. He's not going to deviate from his plan. I don't think he's going to. Even if he comes away with Rubio, I don't think one player is going to make him, up and say, I think I need to go in a different direction. I think he's going to say, you know what? We got a good player. He's going to have to fit the Thunder way, as he always, likes to talk about when he first got here. He's going to have to fit the Thunder way. We're not going to adjust to Rubio. He's going to have to adjust to us.
But then he's going to have to adjust in the draft. Later on, subsequently in other moves, they're going to have to start bringing some toughness. They're going to have to start bringing some interior strength beyond the third pick.
Cap space.
Yeah.
You got a couple guys on the free agent market that you like.
Who do I like these days? You tell me. That was going to be my next question. Shifting away from the draft because it's got so many possibilities. Rubio is obviously the most, in some ways, the pivotal player. Mm-hmm. But how about free agency? I got a couple names for you.
Let's hear them.
One of them is on display in this series. He's a postman for the Orlando Magic, and his name is Marcin Gortat. Give it to me. Can he be an Oklahoma City Thunder? Is that the kind of guy that the Thunder could bring in to play in the post, to share the post with our man, Nenad Krstić?
The Thunder could give him the mid-level exception. About $5 million or so, probably a little bit more than $5 million. That's a good bargain, I think, for Marcin Gortat. I think he's shown – the thing I didn't know, he's only 25 years old.
Whoa.
He's young. Athletic. He can defend. I think his offense is a work in progress. I think he's developing
he's
on that end.
He's a good screener.
But he can play basketball, and I think – if they didn't have a guy named Dwight Howard playing 40 minutes a game or so, you'd see a lot more out of Marcin Gortat and be more impressed than probably you might be now. I like him. I do like him. I think you could get him for cheap, and I think he'd be a good addition.
Okay, Anderson Varejão is an more expensive model than he – and I love him.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, both from an expense standpoint, he's older. I think he's like 27. Varejão's a little bit older.
I think he's 25. I think he's 26. He might be 27. I think he's 26, though.
The other thing is a little more expensive. So there's Gortat. I got another name for you. And it's a guy on a low level. And I'm looking at big men and I'm looking at international players. And his name is Fasenko. Utah Jazz, big man. Kirilai Fasenko, is that his name?
Yeah, I can't pronounce it, but I know what you're talking about. I was reading in the Utah papers. The guy showed up to Summer League with his hair blonde.
Uh-oh.
red flag. I mean, you're Sam Presti. Right. You're talking about character guys and bringing in people who fit in the community.
We already had a guy like this.
And he's about to be on his way out of town.
He's driving down Robert Swift Boulevard.
Yeah, he's about to be out of town with all the tattoos and everything. I don't know if this Fresenko guy is Sam Presti's caliber of character. I don't know. I don't know much about him on the court. He hadn't played much in the 3 years or so he's been in the NBA, so I really couldn't tell you much about him.
Something else I read about him, by the way, and gives me pause, is they have some issues with what he's got posted on his Facebook account. Now, I don't think that Presti and the Thunder want to be messing around. I think they want to worry about how their pick and roll defense a lot more than they do
Facebook.
What's on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, so Darnell, there's some guys that have been in to work out. Last questions. Talk about the guys who've been in to work out recently with the Thunder, and are there any tea leaves for us to read from these this schedule?
Well, no, not really. I think they're working out a variety of guys, guards, forwards, centers. They had B.J. Mullins in here, DeJuan Blair, Jeff Adrian, DeMar DeRozan, I think, is the highest prospect they've had in here so far. Still waiting on hearing whether Tabeet and Rubio will come. Rubio is scheduled to come in this weekend, fly into the States this weekend. I'd like to get some information on how that trip goes when he finally does land in Oklahoma City, even though he's not supposed to work out. Other than that, I think they're just doing their due diligence. I think they're looking at, you know, all the players that are going to be there and seeing if just trying to get a closer look at them and a better feel for who they are as people. I think at this point they pretty much know what these players can do on the court.
To close the show, you picked the Lakers in three, right? Is that what you said?
I picked them in five.
Picked them in five. So that means tomorrow night must be a Laker win.
Tomorrow night and Sunday
night. So you think – so seriously, you thought that the Lakers were going to win two out of three in Orlando. Was that right?
Sure did. And so far, and we have it on video, I said with Dave Morris from News OK and Mike Baldwin, Lakers will win game one and two, lose game three, close them out in game four and five. That was my prediction. So far, I'm still accurate.
You're listening to the Open Mic Podcast. We'll be back with you soon.